Adventures in Research. The year, 1778. The American Revolution is on. The expertly trained, thoroughly disciplined, superbly equipped army of British redcoats against the half-clad, undernourished, ill-fed, unsupplied, and at times divided colonial farmers. Yet the colonists won, because they had something else. The Pennsylvania rifle. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science produced as a public service in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today telling you the story of the Pennsylvania rifle, America's first great invention. Technically, the rifle was not an American invention, for rifles and rifling had been known for many years. Men recognized the scientific truth of the fact that a missile can be hurled farther and straighter if it has a rotary motion at right angles to its line of flight, or in simpler language, it spirals into the air. As far back as 1500, a Viennese marksman named Gustav Kollner had ideas about the grooves or rifling in the barrel of a gun.
But, Herr Kollner, I do not understand. For years we have cleaned and shined the inside of the gun. We have kept it smooth, smooth as glass and shiny as stars. And now you say you want we should cut...
Grooves, Jaffe. That is all. Grooves. Little ruts inside the barrel. That will make the ball fit better and save the gases from the explosion. Nice, straight grooves. The lead ball will be squashed into the grooves and fill up the barrel completely and take the full effect of the explosion. Now, mind what I say. Put grooves inside the barrel.
But the poor metal worker got his orders confused.
Let me see. Did he say straight grooves, or did he say twisted grooves?
Twist them he did, and the gun worked. The new Kollner gun with its spiral grooves shot far and straight. But even by the time of our story, the American Revolution, the practice was not generally adopted by European gun manufacturers. So let us begin our story on the green, fertile fields near the town of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Frontier country in those days, where the first law of the land was the law of survival.
Good morning, Lehman.
Morning. How's the hunting?
Not good. I want you to take a look at my gun. Old friend here seems out of kilter a mite.
Hey, put her down. I'll have a look. Enough work for a dozen gunsmiths here. But with everybody out hunting, with game getting scarcer, every man Jack seems to be roaming further and further.
Well, it ain't our fault, Lehman. Anyway, what's that got to do with you? What difference does it make where we hunt?
Plenty. Trouble with you scalawags is you're all lazy. If you got a ways to walk, a gun feels heavier and heavier. You're always complaining of weight.
Well, a man's got to carry powder and shot, too.
Like I say, the gun has to be as light as possible. You know what it means when the ball gets so light? That means we got to make the bore smaller and smaller. To save on ammunition, you have to make the gun accurate. Every shot has to be a hit.
So?
So every gunsmith in the valley's been working and working. And thinking, too. Decreasing the bore, lengthening the barrel, making the spiral in the rifle more and more effective. All for a couple of extra rabbit or deer. Now you see why I say we could use a couple of dozen more gunsmiths.
Maybe not always for rabbit or deer, Lehman.
Huh? What do you mean by that?
All I know is Lefebvre came back from Philadelphia yesterday. He says that if things get any worse, the Continental Congress is going...
Not so loud, you idiot. You don't know who's a Tory.
Well, maybe we'll find out sooner than we think.
Lancaster gunsmiths had indeed accomplished marvels with the Pioneer musket. Up to 100 yards, they were as accurate as our ordinary rifles of today. They were an amazing improvement over the musket which the British redcoats carried. and a certain Virginia colonel named George Washington knew of the prowess of the Lancaster rifles. He knew the frontiersmen. He had seen them at their hunting. He had fired their rifles. And when war came, he sent to the frontier towns to recruit them. And that news also reached the British under General Gage.
Well, so, what else does the Fool Gazette say?
The paper goes on to say that one of the frontier counties in Pennsylvania had too many recruits, more than his instructions permitted him to engage. So therefore he, with a piece of chalk, drew on a board the portrait of a nose of the common size...
Nose?
Yes, General Gage. Nose.
Go on.
A nose of the common size, which he placed at the distance of 150 yards, declaring that those who should come nearest the mark should be enlisted. 60 hit the object.
60? 60 hitting a target at 150 yards? Impossible.
Quite, sir.
Go on. Is that all?
Yes, sir. Practically all there is to the article.
Well, finish it. 60 hit the object, it claims. Then what does it say?
Well, it says, sir, General Gage, take care of your nose.
It says what?
Well, that's what it says in the Gazette, sir.
150 yards? Impossible. Against our muskets, we shall see.
General, theirs is a peculiar kind of musket, which they call a rifle.
No matter what they carry, a musket can shoot them down.
General, it has come to my attention that General Washington is going to review some of his troops on Cambridge Common. Perhaps it might be advisable to see some of these sharpshooters of his firsthand, eh?
Oh, well, it can do no harm. Go over, Hobson. Circulate. And find out what this Yankee Doodle and his hasty puddings are doing.
British spies were not the only ones gathered on Cambridge Common that day. Many of the farmers from the surrounding countryside came to town to see these lanky riflemen from the West. Riflemen with their long fringed hunting shirts and leather leggings, and with the strangest gun ever seen in all Cambridge.
Great day in the morning. Look at that musket. The longest barrel I ever seen in all my born days.
Small boys pointed out the long, slender barrels, and some of the Yankee farmers laughed. But that wasn't all. There was to be an exhibition of their shooting. A sergeant, far out in the common, drove into the ground a line of poles 7 inches in diameter. He then paced away from the poles 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40.
50 yards he's paced off, and he ain't stopped.
The sergeant kept pacing, and finally had counted off 100 yards.
No gun in the world can hit a 7-inch pole at 100 yards. I don't care if the barrel's 100 feet long.
But the sergeant kept pacing. 150. 200 yards.
Now this is too much. Look at that feller. Hey, you! Come back for the parade!
250 yards away from the 7-inch poles, the sergeant called the men together, and the strange, tall young men from the West slouched out to where he stood.
Now the feller made a mistake. Not a gun in the world that can carry that distance. 250 yards?
There was no command. The young rifleman casually sighted the poles. The poles were hit, every one of them. The long rifles from Pennsylvania had not only carried 250 yards, they had hit the targets. And what did the British spies report? We don't know, but we do know that within a week, the British command announced...
£70 sterling reward for the capture of a Pennsylvania rifleman complete with his weapon.
Before long, one of the riflemen was captured, a tall, lean Virginian named Merchant. The British wasted no time.
Yes, get him aboard ship. They want him sent to England so they can show the people what antagonist we're up against. Everybody thinks this war is a skirmish. They'll think again when they see this fellow and his, what you call it, that rifle. Do a world of good. Stimulate recruits. Goodness knows we can use some recruits over here.
¶¶ But the sight of the talented, captured rifleman had quite another effect.
Crew, did you see him shoot 250 yards away and he picked it right off? Well, I said all along, I never was in favor of our going over there and shooting the colonists anyhow. Let him alone, I says.
I was thinking of enlisting, but no, sir, not against any rifle like that.
What was this Pennsylvania rifle? It differed from the ordinary musket in many ways. One way was in loading. The rifleman's job was a difficult one. He carefully measured the powder, pouring it into his palm from the powder horn. He placed a round, greased patch of cloth over the muzzle. The bullet was placed over this and pushed into the muzzle by the thumb. It was then pushed down by a hickory ramrod. Once the bullet rested on the powder, it was hit with the ramrod until the patch fitted tightly into the rifling grooves. As difficult and complicated as this might seem, a skilled rifleman could load his gun in 30 seconds. But this was more than twice as long as it took the British redcoat to load his musket.
I don't understand it, Lieutenant. Incomprehensible. How could you lose so many men? After all, these American riflemen aren't superhuman, you know. If you can't shoot them down, there's always the bayonet, a taste of cold steel.
I beg your pardon, General. We can't get close enough to them with a bayonet. They hide in back of trees, behind rocks. And with those leather breeches and coat, there's no sighting them until they start firing. Then, by the time we give the command to charge, fix bayonets and charge, sir, the blighters have vanished.
But it takes him a full half minute to reload his piece.
By the time we get the bayonets fixed, they've reloaded and they're hiding behind another rock, ready to have a go at us again. Frankly, sir, I thought we were fighting colonials, but it would appear that they're savages.
Yes, Lieutenant. Savages, perhaps. But with a most remarkable rifle.
The British learned to regard these leather-garbed warriors with such despair that General Washington issued an order about it.
The general earnestly encourages the use of hunting shirts with long breeches made of the same cloth. It is a dress justly supposed to carry no small terror to the enemy, who think every such person a complete marksman.
Yes, it was very largely this rifle in the hands of the lean, leather-shirted marksman that brought victory to America. There were other reasons, of course, but of prime importance was this first great contribution by America to scientific invention, the rifle. For it was the Pennsylvania rifle which had won the frontier in the first place and now held it for its own, thanks to a group of frontiersmen who pooled their knowledge, tinkered and fussed, and came up with an historic adventure in research. And that's today's Adventures in Research, produced in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. These programs are broadcast to armed forces personnel overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week for another transcribed story of science on Adventures in Research.